come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick. The other day, remember, we talked about how, you know, research and traditionally the thought was when there's a threat, it's fight or flight, right? And then more research has discovered, well, that's more typical of the male response, but that in females, there's also that what they call tend and not defend, but join together.
Befriend.
Befriend, tend and befriend, to join together. And I wonder if that's kind of insightful when you talk about collaboration, right? That, you know, proper medical advances, lots of advances in society come when we join together. You know, when there is a threat, and instead of all everyone for themselves or react violently, we actually then collaborate and we work together.
Yeah. You know, I've thought a lot about that since we talked about it earlier this week, and to decide if that's true for me. And I can think of instances where it is, where I was tending and befriending. Mm-hmm. But I think that fight or flight piece is still within me, especially if something comes at me suddenly. Mm-hmm. I have a very strong fight or flight response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very strong.
Yeah.
But that tend and befriend will come once that reaction's gone. Then as I start to problem solve, that's sort of where I go.
Oh, yeah.
Attend and befriend.
I think that's part of that whole conversation around anxiety and fear, right? That our first response is fight or flight, right? That and then when we recognize what our triggers are there, or what it is that's causing the anxiety, then is that the time to sit back and say, how might this be tended to, or how might I befriend something or someone so that it can be a more positive outcome for us dealing with anxiety and fear. I think also trauma does that, right? Mm-hmm. And I know I'm like you. Personally, I'm right away fight or flight. And it gets in my head and I don't know. Mm-hmm. It takes me a while.
Yeah, I sense you're a fighter.
Yeah, and so I have to
not
sit for
a
while. No, but I meant I would be a fighter. I used to be more or less a flighter, like run off. I would hide from that if anything was fearful or someone did something fearful, caused fear in me or whatever. But I tend to be fighting more often, I think, than I used to. I don't know if that's aging.
But you also talk about in your home situation as the eldest, often if there was some kind of sort of threatening situation developed, without getting into specifics,
yes,
you'd also gather your younger siblings together.
Yeah.
So there's sort of like also...
tending.
Maybe it was a flight thing, hide from the threat, but it was also a sense of, you know, it's not just me and myself taking off. Let's tend everybody.
Yeah.
Caring for.
Tend the group, the vulnerable.
Making sure everybody's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's true for a lot of us, although I think it also has to be instilled in us, you know, the idea, maybe this is a stretch, but you know how things used to be, say on ships when they were sinking, right? It was everyone for themselves, or the old term, every man for themselves. But somehow, as far as, you know, I remember reading this in the 19th
that's a very
century
funny example, Rick.
In the 19th century, then all of a sudden they established protocols and rules, like, you know, vulnerable, like women and children first. Of course, there was also a bit, you know, first class people first, which is not helpful. But that I think there, this sort of tend and befriend approach, you know, look that we're in a common situation and gather together. I think it can be educated into us, You know, I think often our initial basic reaction is, you know, fight or flight on my own. But I think we can develop all kinds of healthy protocols. And I think society has. We're not perfect at it, but I think we have. So I think it's a really valid thing. Develop protocols, you know, where we gather together, we share and pool resources to meet challenges, to meet threats, to be proactive. And maybe fight or flight is more just reactive, whereas tend and befriend is also proactive. Maybe I'm going down a real rabbit hole here.
I don't know, but I think you're right in terms of, if we think about our political future right now, right? I think we're in the fight or flight place, right? We are trying to move ourselves back into a less vulnerable position and preparing ourselves for going out and doing the fight. I wonder about that. And that, you know, especially looking ahead to 4 years under the new American government, right? I think that we've got some high anxiety about that, and we're in that space where we're trying to, you know, pull back and figure out.
At every level.
At every level.
Government level.
Yeah. Society level, personal level.
My own personal point, space right now is one of I can't do anything about that situation.
Right.
And so how do I need to care for myself and for my family and for everyone else who's around me? How do I make decisions going forward in relation to what that threat is, and where do I go? Do I go into the States? Do I not?
Yeah, what's a healthy response to it, right? What would be the most helpful?
I'm still thinking through, okay, how can I manage this?
Mm-hmm. But one thing I remind myself, though, is that down in the States, there are many good, thoughtful, discerning people there are in Canada. Mm-hmm. You know, we tend to generalize and vilify as if America is the enemy, and it's not.
Yeah, there are people there.
It's diverse.
Yeah.
And so that fight instinct needs to take that into consideration, mm-hmm. I think.
And that's part of that pulling back to be less vulnerable and to have the space in your head to think about,
yeah,
how do I go and do this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I respond to that? And how do we have conversations with the befriend section, right, of our, when you talk about that?
Personally, I always found, say, bouncing things off of other people. You know, even if it's just, let me check in with you. What do you think about this? Or let's get together because I'm concerned about that. So I've always felt that, you know, gathering resources, people and that, is a significant part of reducing the anxiety and reducing the fear and helping move forward, right? That's where I'm at. So.
Well, I got to mention ChatGPT-4,
uh-huh,
which I use quite a bit now, following in the footsteps of my son, I guess, who uses it quite often for stimulation and for ideas. But in asking it a question, it's amazing what comes back, because there is no it, personality-wise, that's thinking anything. But they will, in an instant, literally like 5 seconds, the machine, the supercomputer, will survey the entire internet and any documents relevant, meaning government documents or whatever. Like I asked it this morning about flights to LA or to India, and it immediately went to the Aeroplan site because I was asking how many points, and it told me how many points I would need for this flight. Now, I don't take it as gospel truth, but I can confirm it later by going to the site.
Right. Yeah.
And the other thing that it's doing now, because it's getting better every time, so we ought not to caricature it in any way, it's changing all the time because it's learning from us, which is also a scary thing. But if you ask for sources that it drew on, it'll give you the sources. Mm-hmm. And it'll even give you the websites where to go to look at those sources.
Right.
So are you saying that that's a technique that you use to deal with fear and anxiety?
Are we dealing with the topic now?
Fear and anxiety?
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, I guess what I was...
Information helps.
That's sort of what I was getting from what you're saying.
Information diminishes the fear and anxiety.
You do it gathering different information. than he does it, but you're both gathering information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're out in the fields gathering the crops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which for us are information. Yeah. So it said, that is ChatGPT, when I asked common points of anxiety for seniors, fear and anxiety for seniors, it had these: losing independence,
mm-hmm.
financial insecurity, becoming a burden to loved ones is a frequent worry. And I thought, hold it, I've never worried about that one. Okay. I can add that to my list now.
Nice. To worry about it.
Loneliness and isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Pervasive fear of pain and disability and loss of control over one's body.
Mm-hmm.
Existential fear of death, which I don't really have, I don't think, but of the pain of dying, yes.
Mm-hmm.
An erosion of a sense of purpose or identity, well, that's long gone.
Mm-hmm.
Elder abuse, worried about being abused, not yet, but who knows, that could come. So that's what the genius of AI came up with.
These are what creates fear and anxiety on seniors, that is very common.
And they the machine probably surveyed in an instant literature that's been written about fear and anxiety among seniors.
But does that mean it's
not
true?
And doesn't mean it's true or complete. No.
I was just
it's suggestive.
But it's interesting that it does touch on a variety of articles that I've been reading, because I feel like there, as I'm aging, that some things are going to get out of control. And because I have some, you know, this trauma response first, fight and flight, I'm trying to figure out ahead of time, how would I deal with that situation? Because mm-hmm. Rick's medical situation has changed drastically since October. And I hadn't even thought about what's going to happen if I'm caring for him. I've always thought he was going to end up caring for me because I've had all the medical problems ever, right? So I started reading more on that. And then again, working in the field that we were pre-retirement, loneliness and alone was so there in your face with seniors, right? They needed the face-to-face pastoral visits. You know, I missed some people's lives, you know, not getting on the phone and doing the things during the pandemic, right? And you think about those moments when they were so alone. But that's not exhaustive.
It is not
exhaustive.
Absolutely not.
But it is certainly some of the places where society and the media are beginning to, have articles and communicate those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I would agree with several of those, like just in terms of medical health, losing control.
Well, and the other thing, you know, technology like AI is not readily available to everybody.
No. Right.
Which is unfortunate in a way.
Yeah.
Though it causes problems, especially when you Google Dr. Google and get something from that. I would trust AI more now than Google.
But that's for information. That's one way to address what we fear or what we're anxious about is gathering more information, finding out more. And I agree that that's something that I do as well. I sometimes will, Jack knows this well, I will sit with it for so long that it becomes bigger than it should.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really have to sternly talk to myself in getting a perspective on it and thinking more broadly than that particular problem. Otherwise, it can consume me. So I really work at, meditation is one. Mm-hmm. So quieting my mind and getting in a space where I'm just trying to turf out all those thoughts and just be.
Mm-hmm.
And And I think I said before, walking is a very is a very calming thing for me.
Yeah.
And then I can get a better perspective on what it is I'm futzing about and making bigger than it really should be.
I call that my walking out, right? I walk it out. How you walk
Perfect.
It out.
Like Perfect.
How you kind of, you know, sometimes when I get to the gym and I just do round after round of walking, and some of that is I have got a problem in my head, an anxiety in my head, a fear in my head, and I've got to keep
it
at it and walk it out too.
Walk it through.
Walk it through, yeah. But I also think the other piece too is I have to talk it out because I'm an extrovert. I can't just sit with it in my head and I have to talk it out. So lots of times, Rick is this perfect place where I put him in that says, you're going to listen to me today about, I've got this on my mind, blah, 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 blah. And I talk it out too, right? Mm-hmm. To the introvert in the family.
And the introvert gets kind of overwhelmed, like, oh, well, how do we fix all of this? You know, instead
and
of
wants
just,
to fix it. Yeah.
Yeah, instead of just sitting there and listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, again, I'm thinking of certain specific, not examples, but key, like, for example, if something like a sudden death happens, often one of the biggest pieces that can really help there is when the people gather together, mm-hmm. right? Family, friends, for support. Again, that's sort of that whole, I think, befriend thing that it doesn't change the fact that a tragic death has occurred, but it certainly gives support to the ones who are, you know, most closely affected. It can reduce some of that anxiety and fear about, well, what about the future? What about now? You know, there can be, you know, consolation, you know, and the odd time, this I do recall somewhat, the odd time a person shows up who actually raises the anxiety. I remember when my father died, one fellow coming through the line and saying a couple of crappy platitudes and that, and my mom being who she was, just ripped into the, and I'm standing there going, what are you doing, Mom? But basically she recognized, like, this is not helpful, so just, you know, just... Mm-hmm. If you can't say anything helpful, shut up and go away. And, you know, so there is the odd outlier who tends to make things worse rather than better. But I think, again, this gathering for support, and I can see that working in a lot of other areas too. So, and maybe I see it so much because that works a lot for me. I mean, I do the exercise. I like the, you know, going off on my own to run or cycle, and that helps clear the mind. But I find that others, you know, community socialization groups is really significant. Just to your list, Jack, when it talks about social isolation, I think that is a huge, huge mm-hmm. problem in this era of individualism, and often fear can lead people to withdraw and isolate themselves more.
I was thinking the other day about that and how it would be wonderful to get up the energy and go out in the evening to a bar that has live music.
Yeah.
Because I one of the things that sustains me all the time is music. I listen and I listen and I try to play on my guitar and I find it so soothing, especially the type of music I listen to, which is usually themes of being forlorn and lost and mm-hmm. finding meaning.
Yeah.
And,
The upbeat stuff. Then.
Yeah. The upbeat stuff, yeah.
So you don't want to do old rock and roll then?
That just, well, I do when I want to walk, I try to get some energy music going.
Oh, okay.
And I try to walk with the rhythm.
Yeah.
So any music that has strong beats that is about my step is perfect. And then keeps my legs moving.
Yeah.
I also thought of something funny. I thought it was funny. You might not think it was. As a senior, I think a lot more about bodily functions than I could have ever anticipated thinking about.
And apologizing for them, too.
Trying to find a gastroenterologist for a colonoscopy, for an endoscopy.
Oh, my gosh.
And bowel movements itself, like...
Yeah.
And needing to pee all the time.
Yeah.
And one doctor told me, well, it's better to pee, have to pee all the time than not be able to pee.
Yes.
And yeah. I didn't think it was funny at the time.
No, I don't, but now it feels funny. Like it is. Yeah. 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 No kidding. Yeah.
So bodily functions, like we get closer to our body, I think, as we age.
Yeah.
We don't take things for granted like we used to.
Yeah. It doesn't work like it used to. That's
Hell no.
One of the problems.
Well, I think the other thing is, when we're not in that vocational field, right, where we're trying to think about our work all day long, right, so we have an 8-hour day or a 10-hour day or whatever, thinking about work, we're not thinking about our body. I rarely think about my body
exactly.
When I was at work. But I get home, and the first thing I'm thinking of is, what can my stomach handle, right, today? Mm-hmm. What am I cooking that will be healthy and safe and not create some extra bodily functions that I don't need to hear or see, and then you have this quiet, and suddenly you're thinking, "Geez, it took me like half an hour to do blah 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 today," you know, and I'm kind of like, So the physiology, your physiology, like it begins to become part of the major part of your day.
Yeah, and so my thought is, I mean,
interesting.
Yeah, you know, you have to adjust your diet, for example. Yep. I mean, I'm doing that. But so then is how do we adjust or how do we manage that change, right? Because often that can create, like you say, huge anxiety. And how then do we reduce that anxiety? Part of it can be really disturbing because you sort of look forward and you're going, you know, this isn't going to get better.
No, that's right.
And that could just raise the anxiety. Because, you know, as younger people used to be, okay, yeah, I've got this injury or got this going on, but, you know, it's going to get fixed and get better. Well, now we go, So I think I like your insight there. I think that's a real, a real stressor.
And well, along with the fact that now we're hearing our 40-something kids, young guys, saying things about their body, right? They're starting to notice all the things that are starting to break down. And so we're thinking, oh man, that's exactly how we were in our 40s, right? You know, worried about this going forward or that or doing this or that.
I was thinking too that, you know, we've got an advantage to some degree, I think, in as much as we're fairly well educated. We know how to use technology. We know how to access the medical field.
Right.
To gain consultation and care if we need it. And I might do that excessively at times, but I just love talking to a doctor.
By the way, listeners, you just turned to Signe there.
And there's a, there was a resource in Ontario where you could talk to a nurse.
Mm. And it's here too. It's like
I've got to get the number somewhere.
Virtual health. Yes. Yeah, virtual health. Health.
Yeah. And they were wonderful, and there was no great waiting.
Yeah.
And I talked to the nurse, and I just felt so much better after talking to her. And
well, usually you said the same thing I did, but I just want to say, just putting it out there.
Yeah, which is,
And usually, you know, the line you get is, well, don't, you know,
Don't think about that.
They almost heard that I was being excessively worried about it and trying to calm me down. But talk to your GP.
Yes.
But not everybody has a GP here, which is
amazing. I know,
Especially in rural areas.
It's the
health. So we're so lucky. That was the key thing on my list is gratitude.
Yeah. How you're dealing with...
Dealing with anxiety and fear. It's just like I'm 74. How many people in the world, if we could quantify it numerically, have lived to that age?
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably in the top 1%.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I would agree.
So every breath I take is a gift from here on in.
Well, and I mean, they even say statistically the reason when old age pensions were established here and south of the border and that, 65 was chosen as the age because that was pretty much the average life expectancy of men, right?
It turns
of course, it was geared towards males, but that was it. So I guess the hope was, well, you know, most of them will be dead by then, so we won't have to pay out so much. And look at now, the average life expectancy is, what, at least 15 years more than that, I think. Yeah.
And they want to raise the retirement age.
Because we're living
Living too long, right? Yeah.
How are we beating the system? But but I think you're right. There's a lot of fortuitousness in the age we're living in and the society we're living in, but that we simply put that aside we seem to forget that, right? So mm-hmm. gratitude, yeah, is key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because mm-hmm. what's pushed upon us by the media almost always is discontent mm-hmm. and grumpiness mm-hmm. and complaining and criticism.
And negativity.
And negativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. lots of negativity. It's interesting you say that, because that makes me think about one thing that makes me anxious, and that's about what will happen with my children and my grandchildren mm-hmm. going forward in a world that has changed so drastically. Like, before I had children, I imagined what it would be like to live in a world where LGBTQ could be welcomed and included and have the same rights, and because back then we could imagine that in the 60s, right? That there was so much yeah. change then, right? And thinking that would be something, and then that they would have jobs and a home, and those kinds of things don't come automatically to many of the millennial generation, right, that we're raising up, or the Gen Zs after that. And so for me, the anxiety is, what's going to happen to them? My young granddaughters, right? Females, what's going to happen? Those kinds of things, you know, I think sit on me more. When the boys were really young, the one thing I used to remember worrying about was whether we would have conscription for a war.
I'm worried about that with Thomas.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was thinking back, that was my biggest worry about their future. And now it seems like it's so much deeper beyond just serving in a military. It is, how are they going to survive in this world? Who's going to be their advocates? How are they going to stand up? You know,
you're making me anxious.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I'm saying that this is my thing that I sit with some days, you know. I think, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The way I appease my anxiety in that regard is I tell myself, okay, our kids are adults. We've done the best we could in raising them. And hopefully we've given them the capacity to deal with what could be sometimes unsolvable problems.
Yeah.
They have character that has developed sometimes with us, sometimes apart from us.
Yeah.
That I admire. And
I can remember saying to them both at various times that there's always a way. There's always a way to manage it. And a lot of time, mm-hmm. initially it was sort of around other kids. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, started into things like funding for university and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So we really worked, I think, at trying to help them understand that their problems can be solved.
Yeah.
There's always a way.
And that's not humble bragging.
And I have to tell myself that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I think that again reflects some of the positives of the age we're living in. I mean, if you look back through history, in many societies, you know, the hierarchies were all fixed. You go back, say, again, I'm more conversant with European history. In the Middle Ages or before, you know, basically, if you grew up on a farm as the son of a shepherd or the daughter, you know, this is your lot in life was pretty well set. You know, there was none of this, what do you want to be when you grow up kind of thing.
And that's still the case.
And that still is a lot in a lot of places.
People don't realize how much, yeah.
Majority of the world, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying then here, there's that sense of, the word I'd use, I guess, is empowerment. You know, you can, mm-hmm. Maybe because we've been raised in democracies, as imperfect as they are, or maybe because there is a bit of this individualism or this more emphasis, not perfect again, about meritocracy, but the idea is you can make a difference. You can, you know, you can make decisions that are beneficial for you, beneficial for your life path, beneficial for society as a whole. And to instill that, I think, like in our children, but maybe in the larger society is important. I just want to add in there, you know, earlier on you mentioned, Jack, about media being, you know, rather negative and doomsaying, and I think it goes even further than that. I know many, say, because I'm a retired minister's clergy, who just have these these terrible sermons that basically tend to disempower people. And I don't know about professors. I know studying history in university in my undergrad years, most profs were pretty good about instilling knowledge, but beyond instilling knowledge, they also, the odd one would also be super negative and super critical, and you'd come out of there going, huh, we're screwed. And that was a minority, but it sticks with you. And sometimes I think we need to move ourselves, whether it's talking to ourselves or talking among us, to away from not just doom scrolling, but doom saying and so on.
Well, you know, it reminds me, my son took a course at the University of Southern California. Now, what was the course on it? It was geography of some sort. Mm-hmm. And the prof came out and said at the end of the lecture, I'm glad I'm not you in terms of what you're going to live
with. Yeah.
But I really respected that, because it wasn't so much dooming the students. It was trying to wake them up to the reality of the conundrum that we have passed on to them with climate crisis. Mm-hmm. And I tended in my later years of teaching to try to instill a radical awareness of the complexities, but also the conundrums, not easily solvable, that are upon them, that generation sitting in front of me. Mm-hmm. But you're right, there's a downside to that, in as much as, is that empowering or disempowering? Mm. But I always felt that knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. But actually, when it comes to something like climate crisis, maybe ignorance is better than the knowledge.
Well,
not knowing the doomsday scenarios that could be unfolding.
Yeah, I guess one of the thoughts I have, and this may be a pretty trite analogy, is that empowering or disempowering. So if the hockey coach yells and screams at you, is that empowering or disempowering? And if you look at, say, a spectrum of players on the team, for some players, that's motivating. You know, the coach screams and yells and is critical. That gets them going, whereas for other players, that just sinks their morale. So to take that to a broader perspective, what works the best? And I think a reality check is important. You know, there's real problems here, but then also there's ways to mitigate it. There are solutions.
And I think that's a piece that we have been trying to teach people, is to be entrepreneurs in their world. And problem solvers, right? And to be critical thinkers. Those three areas have been emphasized in teaching. I know that in mentorship programs, you know, they talk about, well, how could you be an entrepreneur? And that is not a financial entrepreneur or a business entrepreneur, but how can you think about your world the way it is now? Mm-hmm. And what could you do to connect the dots and to create a space for problem solving and move people into conversation together, which is what we talked about earlier, right? Building community or whatever. And I think that's another piece. Like, how do you teach your kids or work with the people that you're working with to create an environment in which they are critical thinkers, problem solvers, and entrepreneurs to deal with the conundrum that you talk about in the doomsday stuff, right? Because if we'd had that kind of teaching early on, I don't know how far I would have gotten in higher education if I'd been constantly lambasted with the doomsday stuff. You know, it was fortunate that I had people who said, you're going to go out and you're going to teach young people. You know, my first year of teaching was teaching the metric system in middle school, right? I mean, what a change, you know, and what an opportunity to connect them to the real world. But nobody thought of that. They just said, oh, well, this is what Canada's going to do. But that's not really what it was all about, right? It was a connection to the world and how we lived and worked in the world. And I think that was a really good movement at that time.
Mm. That's okay. Mm-hmm. I had to learn the metric system when I moved here.
Ah, yeah. Yes, that's right. And we still have this weird mixture of, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, someone
asks me how much, how tall am I and how much do I weigh? I still use the old imperial numbers because that's what I grew up with.
That's right.
You know, and yet others, like, you know, I can drive 60 kilometers an hour. I know exactly what that means. So, yeah. So, I don't know. sometimes we learn, sometimes we don't.
I know. I think about temperature in centigrade, and my whole family is Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So when I talk to them,
right out.
I just can't make that. I can't make that leap anymore. I don't know what Fahrenheit is anymore.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I just know that down in Florida it's cold for them, and they got snow. That.
Yeah, which is New Orleans.
One of the resources I think seniors can all gather and exercise in the face of fear and anxiety is imagination.
Mm, oh, yeah.
And because it requires one. Almost nothing other than imagining, a function of the mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And, but, you know, that's ideally continually invigorated and operative, but at times it's not. Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you a funny story about imagination? We were in Cameroon and we were in the middle of an elephant camp, and we were, I don't know if we told this story before, but anyway, it was a cement circular structure with a little bit of a peaked roof, and there was a little bit of a grate at the top so that nobody could come in. And we were told that we couldn't leave the doors open because the monkeys would come in the night, right? And so that we had to leave the door closed. So you're in the middle of 42 degree weather
hot.
Celsius.
It was stifling,
and hot, and we had to close the door, right? And I had two containers of liquids, and so we each had a container of liquid on each side of the bed. And I was just drinking the stuff down all night long, like sipping it, but getting through it and trying to make it last till I could get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. What does Rick do? He dreams of ice cream palaces.
And walking,
he imagines.
And walking through
and
a Cinnabon
walking through
park
a,
in, the middle
in the
winter.
And when I got
my body temperature.
Yeah, he felt his body temperature go down, and then he would say them out loud to me. Now think about the snow, and I'm like, what? Are you kidding? But imagination.
It's very important.
Yeah. It's very important. Yeah. So it's not just
a survival skill.
That's right. True. So it's not just entrepreneurial, critical thinking. It's imagination is part of that. Yeah, I really love that, Jack.
Well,
thanks for that.
The whole entrepreneurial thing, you need to imagine something different
in order
to move forward.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking when you were talking about that.
Yeah.
So if you are in a, doesn't matter what profession you're in or what wherever you are, we're still talking about professions, but we, being where we are, can still imagine a different way of doing things, and there's a ripple effect. If we're doing something a different way, teaching that to our children or other people, there's a ripple effect to that. And so we still have the ability to be entrepreneurs in our in the space that we're in. And
it requires
imagination.
That's right. Yeah. And I was thinking about it. I wonder how many seniors actually use their imagination on a regular day, like even intentionally, right? It's hard.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's hard to sort
or
of?
If, yeah. if, are we just taught when you're at this age, creativity, imagination is not valuable anymore.
Yeah,
it's,
just wander into the sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just some days it's the tightrope. You're walking that tightrope.
Yeah.
Are we walking into the sunset, or are we being creative here and figuring out how to be joyful? I was listening to a podcast where the woman talks about that our natural state is a joyful state, and how do we create that? How do we go there? How do we stay there and sort of leave the anxiety behind us?
Yeah.
And
we have to go to a bar with Jack.
I want to explore that.
I know. Yeah. I think that's right. I want to go to a bar with you, Jack, and listen to live music, because I think that's the center of joy too. Like I wonder.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Things that bring,
the whole point was the things that bring you joy are the things that you should be doing more of.
Yeah.
And it's so simple, but so hard.
And you don't have to be sitting at home in your quietness and your loneliness, but your imagination can also be seen through a variety of media as well, not just...
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I find really fascinating is websites. So on the rainforest, right?
Mm.
Or some kind of natural place in the world where there's waterfalls or whatever. I mean, I could sit and go on those kind of websites for a long time, right?
I will often go to a website of an artist that I really like and look at all of their works that they've got posted.
Right.
Or websites like that where I just look at beautifully created things.
Or videos of musicians, right? Who,
oh, well,
you know, I love that. What's the name of that group that we listen to a lot? Of Change.
Playing for Change.
Playing for Change.
The videos.
The videos are people all over the world playing their instruments in their environment.
Yeah. I was thinking one of the common threads I'm picking up here, whether we talk about, say, walking, mindfulness, gathering together, creativity. I'm thinking that all of these things, in very real and helpful ways, move us out of this sense of fear and anxiety.
Right.
And for whatever reason, this analogy came to my mind, and it's a story I heard years ago. Like, say you discover all of a sudden you're lost in the woods. The first thing you need to do is not panic. Yeah, you got to need to sit down and center yourself, because when people panic in the woods, it becomes so totally irrational and all kinds of things that actually increase your danger of not surviving or not finding your way back. So there's a matter of, you know, you got to sit down and focus. And I think in a broader sense, what we're talking about here is ways to get us to, so we're not in our head, like you were saying earlier, Sydney, where all of a sudden things just multiply and stack up inside our minds and it just becomes worse and worse and unmanageable. And I think what I find encouraging is we've named multiple ways that all help us and move us towards, I think, reduced fear and anxiety and move us ahead as people, regardless of our age. So.
Yeah, I wonder whether the whole sense of being in your head,
mm-hmm,
and the 90-some percent of thoughts that drive their way through our head every day habitually are the same as what happened yesterday and the day before. So maybe the key, like for imagining, for example, you'd need to set that aside a bit, that internal playing over and over again in our heads.
That Groundhog Day moment.
Yeah. And there's various ways of doing that. For me, taking out of my head is listening to music,
mm-hmm,
and the words that are being said. There's one beautiful sad song that comes up on my Spotify every now and then about a senior who's sitting in a senior's home, and she's imagining running through the field as a young girl, but she can't walk anymore, but she can imagine having been young and running through the field on a warm summer day.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I think about is sitting by the ocean and smelling the sea and smelling and hearing the birds, the seagulls,
mm-hmm,
cawing.
Mm.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And I just long to do that, but we're so far always, it seems, from any ocean.
You have to go to Gimli.
And when I was in L.A., it was so damn cold in February by the Pacific.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was miserable.
Yeah, it wasn't enjoyable.
I should have sat down and imagined a better day.
You know, it's the same, I think the same way about my grieving process too, right? In terms of anxiety, you know, all the things that happened to my mother over the years and to grieve her, all the terrible situations that happened to her. But the one thing that sits in my head is when she and my dad had their 25th wedding anniversary, all of us kids put our money together and sent them to Hawaii. And the first thing she said when she got off the plane was, "I swam in the ocean." Now, my mother never swam anywhere. We lived by the lake, and she didn't even go, you know, other than putting her feet in the water. She was fearful of water, and she never really learned how to swim. And that's my big picture. I never saw her out there on this, but she was out there laying on her back in the salt water, what she called swimming, right? And I think about that too, like the imagination to make you move from the everyday kinds of anxiety and fear and, you know, rewriting our life or whatever. We have to imagine something beautiful in the midst of that in order to move from yeah. that space.
And that rewriting your life, that really resonates with me in terms of, I think a lot about work and I think a lot about things that have happened and it's, I don't know, I don't have words for it. It almost is overwhelming sometimes when I think about it, and I'm not really sure why. So I really like that idea of, okay, let's break this up. Let's think of something beautiful in here, because I did the best I could my whole life with what I had, and I can't think about it in terms of regrets or, you know, wish I'd done this, wish I'd done that. I can't think that way because I've had a great life. I still have a great life. Mm-hmm. And but I think it's a common thing as when you're not working anymore to think about that work and just process it. Process what that meant and what that was. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's just the
to sift through it kind of and figure out what can you carry forward.
Yeah,
what can you leave behind?
Yeah, cuz of course, it's never perfect. It's never a bed of roses. It's never, I mean, so I like that.
Yeah.
So I maybe like what we need is the bucket list. Whether we perform it or not, or get there, we imagine it.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if imagination can be taught. It's not something that everybody is innately, richly able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know that I attended a creativity workshop in New York, and it had to do with, there was no skills involved, but they told you to go for a coffee at a Starbucks or whatever.
Yeah.
And take you, because prior they had prepped us with buying a drawing pad.
Oh yeah.
And a special kind of pen.
Yeah.
And just draw what you see. Okay. What you focus on.
Yes, yes.
And I didn't know I could draw.
Yeah.
But it was great, I thought.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you share it with others. And so that was just the drawing component. But just the seeing of colors, you know, yeah. The so imagination,
seeing in a certain
creativity
way,
can be taught.
Yeah,
I think so.
Imagination can be taught. And the other thing that occurred to me, Rick, when you were talking earlier, I forget what it was about, but empathy can be taught.
Yes.
There's a university in California, I think it was Stanford, had a whole stream of courses on empathy. And I thought, well, isn't empathy something that is innately human? No, it's not.
No.
It can be taught.
Yeah.
So I can think of, without being specific, a whole class of political leaders who maybe need to take a few of those courses.
Yeah.
But I think that's a tremendous insight. And I think add to that, even at our age, it can be taught. It can be.
Where it's so important at our age.
At our age.
The imagination. Yeah.
True. Well, I often think that at our age, people think you're done with any kind of learning or progress or moving forward or creativity. And I would tend to disagree. I think that's a great
So maybe insight, imagining is a form of creativity.
Oh, I think so.
Oh, sure.
Very much
like
so.
When I've had dreams in the last couple of years of skating. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to, I love hockey and skating. And that whole notion of pushing one skate and then the other and gliding and hearing the crunch of the skate on the ice. And rhythmically just going one side, next side, one side, other side. And just the freedom and the body swaying with the movements, that's such a gift. And I can almost, I am skating in my mind.
Yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh. There's no question.
You were a beautiful skater.
I was a beautiful skater.
Yeah. That is totally.
A beautiful imaginer of skating.
but I think that's still a plus. I mean, there's part of it where I'm sure you grieve the fact you're not doing that or able to right now. But there's also the fact that, you know, you have done it and in your mind.
Yeah.
And that creativity is very real. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just sort of made up stuff. Yeah.
Good.
I was going to remind Signe about the friend that we had, BJ, whose last request that her friends, or was he related, they were related, I guess, was to go to the Pacific Ocean and stand in the water.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So they drove all the way from, well, where'd they drive from? Camrose?
Alberta. Mm-hmm.
From Alberta to Vancouver, and she stood in the ocean, and that was...
all she needed.
That's all she needed. Mm-hmm. It was on her, primary on her bucket list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I think so.
They made it happen for her.
Yeah, very cool. I think we're...
well, I guess we're imaginaried out for today. Thank you so much.
Wow.
For all the sharing.
That was great good stuff. Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RSS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is foursseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral four, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.